What's up and welcome to the Active Amputee Podcast. Everything people with a limb difference need to live an active and exciting lifestyle. I'm Bjorn Eser, the founder of and shaker and maker behind the Active Amputee. And you're listening to episode 1 of the Active Amputee Podcast. Before we get started, I would like to say a word of thanks to Dan and Beth for their amazing support. I met them back in 2008 when I was working in East Timor, and we stayed in touch ever since. Beth's father Andy passed away in June last year. For almost 40 years, Andy had worked for the Tasmanian Prosthetic and Orthotic Service. In addition, he was involved with the International Committee of the Red Cross, offering his amazing skills and expertise to people in need in Botswana and Ethiopia, in Sudan, Pakistan and North Korea. To commemorate Andy and his legacy, Beth and Dan made a very generous donation to the Active Amputee. And I would like to dedicate the first 3 episodes of this new show to Beth's father Andy. And I would like to say a big thank you to Beth and to Dan. My journey to losing my leg, part 1. It all started with bone cancer. My journey to being an amputee has been a long one, in several stages drawn out over almost 2 decades. In this first episode, I want to tell you how it all began. A bit of pain in the knee, a cancer diagnosis, a year-long fight. As a kid, I loved sports, track and field, skiing, skateboarding, surfing, volleyball, you name it, and the chances were really high that I liked it. You normally found me running around somewhere, and in my teens, this somewhere often meant the volleyball court. That's what I was really passionate about. Until one day when my left knee started to hurt. Initially, nothing too annoying. The pain only occurred when I was really active and trained a lot. At that time, I think I was 15, I was still growing, and so the doctor wasn't too worried either. At my age, given all the sports I played and still growing, so he said, the joints sometimes found it hard to keep up. Just take it a bit slower for some time and the knee will sort itself out, so his advice. And that's what I did. I took it a bit slower. I even stopped my volleyball practice, as volleyball seemed to be the very activity that caused me the most pain. But still, the knee got worse instead of better. That wasn't the plan. And after some weeks, I decided to see my doc again. By the time I had my appointment, the knee was swollen and seemed to get bigger by the day. Something just wasn't right. I sensed it. And looking back, I think the doc sensed it too. He just wasn't admitting to it. He referred me to a specialist, someone with better equipment, being in a better position to come up with a better diagnosis. A computer tomography scan was scheduled, hoping to bring about a result we could then base a therapy on. And these scans showed some unusual growth in or around my upper tibia. And that in itself was worrying enough, so that a specialist referred me to the next hospital to have a biopsy. That's a small surgery to take a sample of the body tissue for further examination. I wasn't told then, but I'm sure he already knew that there's a high chance that the unusual growth in the upper tibia was actually bone cancer. From the day I went for the biopsy onward, things happened very quickly. The tissue they extracted showed that I had an osteosarcoma in my upper tibia. So instead of being discharged after the surgery, I was immediately transferred to the teaching hospital of the University of the Saarland in Homburg, Germany. The children's oncology ward would be my second home for the months to come. And while I initially thought being admitted to the children's ward was a real bummer, I mean, I turned 16 the week I first set foot onto the ward, I think it actually saved my life. Surviving became a long-term team effort. And the fact that I survived is mainly due to the team around Norbert Graf, a well-known and immensely committed cancer specialist with a great sense of humor who always seemed relaxed even in the most stressful of situations. Norbert and his team are the most amazing group of people I've ever encountered. And looking back at my 40-something years and having lived on 4 continents and worked in more than 2 dozen countries, I think I've met more than my fair share of amazing people from all around the world. Norbert isn't a sweet talker. He was open and honest, explained what I was about to face. He stressed that the months to come would be a journey that will take its toll on the whole family and that everyone needs to pull his or her weight. things would be rough and with an uncertain outcome. But he also made it clear that we could rely on him and his experience, on his team and the commitment of each and everyone in the clinic to do whatever is possible to beat the cancer. And while the odds weren't the best, I felt I had a good base to start this journey from. Norbert's way of taking me and my family serious in our worries and our fears, his way of being frank and not beating around the bush, and the fact that he was always approachable made all the difference. We got along well from the very beginning, and we are still friends 30 years later. I started chemotherapy immediately, some wild cocktail of three different drugs. And believe it or not, while they were household names for me back then, I actually can't recall them anymore. They had to be administered over 3 consecutive weeks before my body was finally given a few days off to recover. Then the cycle would start again. And while I was puking my guts out, lost my hair and almost 15 kilograms, I never lost my spirit. My family was great and the best support I could have wished for. And the hospital team did what they had promised in the beginning. That is, they did whatever possible to beat the cancer. And they were good at it. Good at beating the cancer. The tumor responded well to the chemotherapy. The sarcoma stopped growing. It even shrank a bit. At least I think it did. It's amazing how memory fades even on facts that were so essential in my life. After a few months, it was time for a major surgery. The idea was to take out almost all of the tibia and replace it with an endoprosthesis. An endoprosthesis in my case was basically a metal bone replacement, starting 2 inches above the ankle, going all the way up to the knee. The actual knee joint would be fixed into the femur with a metal pin. And while I would not be able to run and do sports with my new knee, I would be able to walk and live a normal life on 2 legs. Not too bad, I thought, if the surgeon could implant the endoprosthesis, that was. From what he could tell from the x-rays, he wasn't sure that was actually possible. So by the time of being rolled into the operating theater, I had a 50-50 chance of leaving it with 2 legs again a couple of hours later. Or of losing my left leg then and there. But being an almost naive optimist, I had it clear in my mind that losing the leg just wasn't an option. It just wasn't going to happen. Not then, not there, not in this way. Beating the odds. Luck was on my side. Luck and a very skilled orthopedic surgeon. He managed to implant the lower end of the metal rod firmly into my ankle and anchored the upper end firmly into my femur. A few hours later, I woke up, happy. A few days later, I saw the long wound for the first time, held together by almost 50 stitches, and it looked good. Another few days on, I started simple physiotherapy exercises. And soon, it was back to the chemotherapy. While the battle was not yet over, I was confident that I was on my way to recovery. Yes, there were ups and downs. My body had more and more problems handling the side effects of the drugs. For some time, I had to be tube-fed through my nose, and I felt weak and exhausted. But by about spring, I was certain. Dying isn't part of the options anymore. Not then, not there, not in this way. Norbert and his team kept their promise to do their very best. My family kept its promise to create the best environment anyone could ask for healing and recovery. And I kept my side of the promise to never give up, to keep it together till the last round of drugs was pumped through my system. So after almost a year of battling cancer, of dealing with the side effects of chemotherapy, after weeks over weeks in which the children's ward was a second home, I was able to slowly close this chapter and move on. Not from one day to the next, I still had to go for the regular checkups, but the intervals between them grew longer and longer. The leg was healing well. I soon went back to school. I started a daily swimming routine to get fit. I worked on my bike so that I could ride it with one leg. For almost 2 decades, I lived a normal life. And while the leg wasn't fully functional, it was a trusted companion for a whole range of adventures. So much for the first part of my journey to losing my leg. If you want to know how it continued and how I actually became an amputee a couple years later, just tune in again and listen to episode 2. I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the new episodes. And I would really appreciate it if you leave me a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to learn more about the Active Amputee, make sure to head over to www.theactiveamputee.org, where you find hundreds of articles from amputees for amputees. Articles filled with inspiration, information, and encouragement to be active and live a rewarding life. I see you all again for the next episode. Until then, all the best. This is Bjorn from The Active Amputee.